Takshurunmilitam jenam tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhuttale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Juta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaisnavamsya Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitam Sjam Hare Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinataranam Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinataranam. Hare Krishna. Dai Sri La Prabhupada ki. So it is an honor and a pleasure to once again visit here at Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. I'm just actually coming out of a 2-year vrata, and that's why I could not visit any of our temples here in India. And of course, in the last 2 years, many events have taken place. So there's a few things I wanted to share with all of you. Today is a special day also, as we all know, being at the appearance day of one of our foremost acharyas in our disciplic succession, Srila Madhvacharya, whose appearance place is very close to where we have a small preaching center in South Karnataka, close to Udupi. We are also within what is called Parashuram Kshetra, where Srila Madhvacharya chose to appear. And so I wanted to speak a little bit about this great personality. And it's actually the first time I come back to Chaupati. First time I came here actually was 2006. And at that time, of course, many of you are knowing one devotee whom Krishna took away last year, Gaur Krishna Prabhu. So he was actually the... When I left India many years ago, the last darshan I had were of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, but not here, in Secunderabad. Because in Secunderabad, Hyderabad, we also have small... we have deities of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. So coming back to India, the first darshan was also Sri Sri Radha Gopinath here in Chaupati. And in many ways that was arranged actually by Gaur Krishna Prabhu. And last year, actually in our devotional life, within our ISKCON society, we have so many activities, so many preaching activities, so many devotees, and naturally, Krishna every year calls back different devotees, sometimes very unexpectedly, and sometimes in circumstances which are very difficult for us to understand as well. Last year, for myself, two very close disciples actually left this world. Gaur Krishna Prabhu was one of them. And some of you may also know another devotee from Indonesia, Bhagirath Prabhu, who had spent 3 years actually in training at Govardhan, taking the course that was arranged by Gopi Paranandananda Prabhu, whom Krishna also took away. Gopi Paranandananda Prabhu was very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada, who was very strong in well versed in Sanskrit, working many years with the BBT, and was heading up actually this what is called Srimad Bhagavatam Vidyapitam, which is still functioning actually, no longer in Govardhan but now in Vrindavan. So this devotee Bhagirath Prabhu had spent about 4 years in India, and within a very short time actually picked up Sanskrit quite well and was performing all kinds of yajñas. But within a short time Krishna somehow decided to take him back. And similarly for our Gaur Krishna Prabhu, it was a great loss for I'm sure the devotees here in Chaupati. And actually I wanted to take this opportunity of my coming here today to actually express my very deep and sincere appreciation, especially to the devotees serving here at Chaupati, for the wonderful association that you all gave to this devotee. A few days ago I was actually visiting Neelachal Dham. Some of you may not know where is Neelachal Dham is a new farm project that is under Juhu, temple. This was acquired just, I think, a year and a half, at most 2 years back. And one devotee who is closely connected with the Chopati temple as well, and was serving, I believe, at the Awada project, Damodar Dulal. When I was visiting a few days ago, he happened to remember also Gaur Krishna, and he was mentioning how Gaur Krishna Prabhu had revealed to him or shared with him his realization the first day he had, I believe, visited or stayed here at the Chopati temple, where he had observed, I forget which of the temple presidents, maybe Radha Gopinath Prabhu, he had observed that one of the leaders was personally cleaning the floor in the morning. And this had greatly impressed him and had inspired him to actually join and become a full-time devotee and serve here. So I'm actually greatly indebted to all of the devotees here at the Chopati temple. And just wanted to express my gratitude for... actually, Gaur Krishna Prabhu was, in many ways, although not so close in serving where I was preaching, but he was on the lookout for me in different ways. Means he was conscious, very helpful in different ways to arrange for my coming to India. And he had certain specialties. One of them, of course, was computers. But he managed to utilize that very much. Somebody told me that, I think it was Radhanath Maharaj, that or one devotee here, that he was looking after, I mean, many, maybe 15 websites or some enormous number like this that only a computer whiz can do. So actually, he was utilizing that, of course, in Krishna service. And after he left, actually, I had met his father before, but I met him again with various photos of the last days. And his father was, who is from Vaishnav background, was also greatly appreciating the wonderful service that he had performed here at the Chopati temple, especially. All of us, actually, it is our greatest of fortunes if we can get even a small opportunity to render service. It is the perfection of life to actually come in contact with Vaishnavas, with devotees. And our movement, the movement that Srila Prabhupada has established, is still a very young movement. Actually, our sampradaya is made up of youthful personalities, beginning with Lord Krishna, of course. He is Navayovanam, Advaitam Achutam Anadim Anantarupam Ajyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha, eternally youthful. And of course, Lord Chaitanya, by his personal life and example, also very youthful. The founder Acharya of our society, although appearing in the Western countries in an older body was also very youthful. his mind was always alert, fresh, and he enthused, as we all know, so many young people, youths of America. So we have a very close connection with this youthful aspect. when thinking about Srila Madhvacharya, he also, I was just reading a little bit, how, as we all know, at a very young age, he took to the order of sannyas, I believe at the age of 11. Before that, from the age of, actually normally one who is coming from Brahmana family takes Gayatri Mantra, normally around the age of 8. He took Gayatri Mantra at the age of 5, you know. And then at the age of 11, I believe, left home to live at the Mutt in Udupi, and within 1 year decided that's it. You know, he took sannyas and preached very extensively throughout his whole life, as we all know. Our movement is a preaching movement, actually. Our specialty is dharma, preaching about dharma. And dharma is such a thing that it is like, in many ways, like Krishna, you know, unlimited, endless. The specialty of Vaishnavas is to actually deepen their understanding of what is dharma. Actually, our life and soul is meant to be the understanding and application of dharma. A few years back, I in reading the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Srila Narada Muni is explaining, actually, especially about Varnasrama Dharma, one very nice verse. I might have mentioned it here before, but it's a source of inspiration for me. and Narada Muni is describing to Yudhisthira Maharaj, who requested him to speak about specifically Varnasrama Dharma. So he begins in the first, actually that's in the 11th chapter of the 7th canto, Dharma Mulam Hi Bhagavan. Dharma Mulam Hi Bhagavan. The essence of dharma is God, is Bhagavan. Sarva Veda Mayo Harihi. Sarva Veda Mayo Harihi. All of the Vedic literatures point to that same Bhagavan, who is known also as Hari. And then Narada Muni goes on to explain, Smritam cha tadvidam rajan. Smritam cha. The devotees of the Lord are constantly endeavoring to deepen their understanding of dharma, are constantly endeavoring to remember how to nicely, properly apply the principles of dharma. And then if we do this, then yena chatma prasidati. Smritam cha tadvidam rajan. Yena chatma prasidati. That means that actually the body, the mind, and the soul will fully, completely become satisfied. That verse actually is very closely connected with the very more well-known verse in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, sabai pumsham paro dharmo jato bhakti radhokshaji ahaitukiya pratihata yayatma suprasirati. Same message actually is given. So dharma, and I wanted to speak a little bit about this today because this is what we we should try to understand. There is a tremendous need all over the world actually for people to know about dharma. And what is very important for all of us as devotees, devotee means someone who is more committed, meant to be more committed, meant to have a deeper understanding also of dharma. So therefore, we should know that dharma, it is existing on two levels. Both are referred to as swadharma. Sometimes we think swadharma means what is very natural and original. So Srila Prabhupada explains, there is swadharma on the material platform and there is swadharma on the spiritual platform. And what's important for us to know is that actually both deal with eternal principles, eternal concepts. This morning actually I was at Mira Road, Sri Sri Radha Giridhari Temple, which I had not been there, of course, also for the last few years, so that's coming up. We were discussing a little bit on this point, how when we analyze more closely, you know, the whole concept of dharma, one of the very, we could say, catchy ideologies nowadays all over the world is the concept of sustainability, isn't it? Ecology, sustainability. Because we have failed to understand these concepts all over the world, we have created horrible imbalances, both in the lives of individuals and also in nature itself, as we know. And we have a colossal, we could say, imbalance, and which is threatening our lives and threatening nature in so many ways. And from a devotee point of view, and this is important, from a devotee point of view, we should know that actually all of this is related to the fact that we are not understanding sufficiently or not applying or following principles of dharma. So one realization which in the last few years, especially in the context of working with and trying to understand more deeply about the principles of Varnashrama Dharma, which is one of the two swadharmas. Bhagavad Dharma is swadharma, Varnashrama Dharma is swadharma. So very important for us to know that these are actually sustainable systems that Krishna has given. We are living here in the material world, and whatever Krishna does, the whole material creation is coming from Krishna. So whatever Krishna creates, whatever he does, it is perfect, isn't it? So the whole material arrangement, which is connected with the gunas, with the three modes of material nature, with prakriti, if we understand, and that's what one studies in what is called Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya philosophy is one of three departments, that make up what is called Charvidya. Charvidya. There are four sciences. Four sciences within our Vedic culture, which are meant to be taken up, studied, and then imparted or given, you see, to people in general. And the first one is the science of philosophy. And this philosophy is divided into Sankhya and Yoga. There's a third one also in reference to perception. So, philosophy, I mean the whole Bhagavad Gita is teaching us about the philosophy of life. Philosophy is dealing especially with what is called tattva, understanding the nature, the truth of things, both material and spiritual. So, in addition to philosophy, the other three sciences, and that's why we should know, especially as devotees, what those three sciences are and how they are meant to apply within our lives. The second science is referred to as the science of Vedic knowledge or Vedic teachings. And that is broken down actually in what Srila Prabhupada and our other acharyas refer to as 14 books of knowledge. And that is what makes up actually the subject matter or the curriculum for those who traditionally study in Gurukula. Gurukul curriculum is based on these 14 books of knowledge. And that's why it takes many years actually for a young boy to receive this type of education. And one becomes in this way very qualified brahmana. The third science is called the science of politics. Of course, we do hear about politics sometimes within our temples, but not the right kind of politics. There's a whole science, the science of governance, which is meant to be taken up by those who are leaders within society. That means the kshatriyas. So the brahmanas, they study the Vedas, the whole realm, various divisions of the Vedas. Whereas the kshatriyas, they concentrate especially on aspects of governance, you see. And there are books, special books in reference to that, such as Manusamhita and Chanakya Niti, etc. like that. And then the fourth science is called the science of economics, which is the domain for Vaishyas. So like this we see how Krishna has arranged specific knowledge that covers the whole realm of our existence, both on the spiritual level as well as on the material level. So it is very important for us, if we analyze and observe what is going on around the world, well, we have a situation where there's a major deviation, actually, in terms of all of these four sciences, we could say. if we just look at economics, economics are actually very simple in the Vedic culture, simply defined. Economics are defined once we begin to understand this a little bit and we compare with what is going on all over the world, then we can begin to understand that we are greatly deviated. You know, we have greatly deviated from what is called the standard way of doing economics. So economics is defined by our acharyas, specifically by Chanakya, and these four sciences are actually given in in what is called the Kautilya Arthashastra, which is an important part actually of Vedic literatures. And the science of economics is defined in three words: Krishi, Goraksha, Vanijam. Krishi, Goraksha, Vanijam. Agriculture, protection of cows, and trade in connection with agriculture and protection of cows. And that is why Srila Prabhupada on so many occasions, you know, it is not by chance or by whim that Srila Prabhupada established New Vrindavan and then Gita Nagari and other communities, and that just a few devotees, you know, should be connected with these farm communities. The farm communities, we should also know, we should try to understand, are meant to be a stepping stone. They are meant to be a stepping stone towards reestablishing. Now, many of you will find this maybe a little difficult to understand or to accept initially. These farm communities are meant to be a stepping stone towards establishing what is called an agrarian lifestyle. Most of us who are living as we are in cities around the world, naturally we become very accustomed and I would say even conditioned to, you know, this is how we live in modern day society. But in modern day society, the way we live, if we look at Shastra and if we look at history also, is not normal. And what the main reason why it's not normal, of course, coming back to the whole aspect or concept of sustainability, is that it is not sustainable. You see, Krishna has created sustainable systems, scientific sustainable systems. Bhagavad Dharma, the science of bhakti, on which we mainly concentrate. Lord Chaitanya has actually 500 years ago, there was, I would say, less necessity to give so much of emphasis or focus on the material Swadharma, because majority of people were living in villages actually 500 years ago. And if we look at descriptions that are given just before the British came to India, you know, the villages of India were nicely organized, and people were happy. People were respecting one another. People were of good character. This is what we read, actually, you know, in history. But as many Western concepts were introduced, and especially what we call Westernization, industrialization especially, we have swayed and gone away actually from this more natural, we call Vedic, because lifestyle, which is agrarian lifestyle. Actually, our whole, it's important for us as devotees to understand, important for us as a society also to understand, the whole trend of increased urbanization all over the world is actually doing the greatest disservice to humanity and to the planet. And because this knowledge is actually there in our Shastra, the more we understand and the more we can see that it is a deviation, because we are promoting, we means modern day leadership all over the world, are blindly promoting in so many ways unsustainable systems. And therefore, it is part of our duty and responsibility. Our society, I was mentioning earlier, our society primarily is a preaching society. We are meant to preach following in the footsteps of so many great acharyas. What is there actually in the Shastra? What is connected with and what is the essence of Dharma? And of course, the essence of Dharma, in its highest form and expression, is to become liberated from this material world, to develop our love for Krishna, to practice through the practice of bhakti, devotional service. But that practice of bhakti or devotional service, when we are surrounded and living in an atmosphere which is not conducive in so many ways, it is extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. So part of our duty and responsibility is to actually reintroduce and implement these two levels of Dharma. We should know, we should understand, Prabhupada has explained many times, how if we just concentrate on one aspect, we create an imbalance. We create an imbalance in our own lives and also within society. A more recent, well, it's actually, Srila Prabhupada has given actually all this knowledge through his books, conversations, etc. Srila Prabhupada, and of course I realize that I'm right here in Mumbai, you know, Mumbai, one of the large cities of India, and we have so many large cities all over the world. But I want to leave a thought with you, which initially you won't like. I'm preparing you. So kindly be attentive. Yeah. If we understand and accept, at least theoretically, that our Vedic culture is primarily an agrarian-based culture. I won't take a vote, a show of hands here, but it is there in so many purports, and Prabhupada, for example, speaks about Krishna and Balaram, two rather important personalities. And he points out how, just see, Krishna and Balaram, they were living in Vrindavan, in the small village of Vrindavan, which has changed tremendously, of course, today. But 5,000 years ago, and maybe not that long ago as well, that small village of Vrindavan is where Krishna and Balaram perform their Nitya Lila, right? Of looking after cows every day. And everyone in Vrindavan, they were growing their own food. They were living a very simple life. Simple living, high thinking, the highest thinking. And Prabhupada gives Vrindavan as the model, as the prototype, as the example of how we should be living. I haven't come yet to what I want to say. I'm warming up. Just around the corner. So, just want to keep everyone's attention here. So, if we understand that Vedic culture is primarily an agrarian-based culture, and that we are meant to live and be part of this agrarian-based culture where every day we are surrounded by cows, not only on the altar. Where we can actually go and milk cows and get milk, make yogurt and butter and buttermilk and ghee. And if we have that understanding, then we will be able to accept, at least theoretically, although it may be painful.
Yeah.
This realization came to me more strongly in the last few years, and it is the following, and it's it is directly in keeping with this understanding that our cities all over the world, where we have such wonderful temples as the one we have here at Chaupati, Sri Sri Radha, Gopinath, and which is attracting so many wonderful devotees and engaging so many devotees as well. Our city temples, such as in Juhu as well, Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari and others, our city temples and our cities are meant to be primarily our preaching basis. Srila Prabhupada went to New York City to preach. Srila Prabhupada sent hundreds of his disciples to different countries to preach. He sent them primarily in the cities because that's where the majority of people are. And the majority of people in the cities are in Maya also. That's why Prabhupada went to New York, because the strongest presence of Maya was there. So in a short line, our cities are meant to be our preaching basis. But the country and the villages are meant to be our living basis. Try and understand what that means. The villages and the country is meant to be our living basis. Means where we live, where we work, where we develop traditional where we develop traditional occupations. Most of our devotees all over the world who are living in cities have taken up to non-traditional occupations, which is actually not healthy. Not healthy materially, not healthy spiritually. We're in difficulty. Of course, devotees who are sincere can still manage, but it is not the ideal. We should understand that part of our responsibility as devotees, as preachers, as a society. Why did Srila Prabhupada say the following phrase? One of the objectives of our societies is to bring a complete overhaul in society. What does that mean? It means this very thing. It is not simply that overhaul means we just get everyone to take a bead bag in their hand and chant Hare Krishna. Of course we want to do that too. We want everyone to chant the holy name. We want everyone to chant and to practice bhakti devotional service. But we want to do that in such a way that the atmosphere in which we will do that will be more conducive for our advancement in devotional life. Srila Prabhupada actually, he refers to Cowper, one of the poet who happened to mention how cities are actually man-made, whereas villages are God-made. Village is more natural. Cities exist. They existed during Krishna's time, but they were very different than modern-day cities. Completely different. Cities have their place. Just like when I went to Cambodia for the first time, I was actually very happy to notice that practically there are no cities. 90%, 95% of the people live actually in villages. It's changing now, unfortunately, with modernization. But majority of people live in villages, and practically, actually, we started a small preaching center some few years back, and we started giving classes to that was in the capital in Phnom Penh, and just beside the preaching center we had, there was a teacher training school. So we started our own teacher training, our own classes. So we had like about 15 students who came to our classes. Then at one time I thought of taking a small survey, how many brothers and sisters you have at home. Most of them had between 5 and 8 brothers and sisters, not 1 or 2 or 3. Then I asked them, all 15 answered the same, more or less. How many cows do you have at home? Because they're all from village. So they all said, well, between 10 and 20. But to come to Phnom Penh and to take up studies, they've had to sell some of their cows. You see, because the whole thought and mentality is that, yes, come to the city, get a higher education, you'll make more money. Is that the goal of life? No. Actually, opulence follows automatically when one lives according to Shastra. The residents of Vrindavan were not poor. They were not poor materially, and of course, not poor spiritually as well. Our villages here in India were not poor also. Somebody wrote a book, I've yet to find out, because mostly when we think of villages, we think of poverty. Because actually in Kali Yuga, we have had a long history of bad kshatriyas. Bad kings, bad kingdoms. And therefore we have a wrong understanding. But actually village life, when there is proper support and presence, especially of brahmanas and kshatriyas, that village will become prosperous. The people will be happy. All of their needs will be met, etc. So, I request all of you to kindly think, meditate on this idea or this principle that cities are meant to be places for preaching primarily. Therefore, to make it simple, cities are meant to be our preaching basis. And the country, the villages, are meant to be our living place. We should be working towards realizing this factually. And I know this morning after the class, because I was mentioning it, I was pointing out the same idea, and then one grihastha came to me after, Maharaj, are you serious? It's extremely difficult to conceive or think about relocating like that. So we're not expecting that, tomorrow morning or this afternoon. that, but we should be thinking in this way. We should be thinking, this is part of dharma. Otherwise, what's happening? You know, we have become totally disconnected with the basis and the pillars of dharma, which are cows. Dharma begins with the protection of cows. When we cut out, you know, when we become disconnected with cows, as we have, in the cities, living in the cities means we are disconnected with cows. We no longer look after cows. We no longer see cows. We no longer think about cows. We no longer care about cows. If we no longer care about cows, what's Krishna going to care about us? Isn't it? Krishna is constantly meditating on his cows. Krishna worships every day his cows. Krishna cannot live without cows. How can we manage to live without cows? The Brahminical culture cannot be established without cows. Krishna consciousness cannot be practiced without cows. How are we managing to practice our Krishna consciousness without cows? We must ask ourselves these questions. Recently, actually, some of our devotees, I was happy to learn, this is with the leadership of our temple president in Jaipur, Panchratna Prabhu, and also temple president in Baroda, Basu Ghosh Prabhu. They established a trust, actually, which is closely connected with ISKCON, with the approval and sanction of the leadership in, here in India. And they started or established what is called the Ahimsa Ahimsa Trust for protecting cows. And the devotees should try to find out a little bit more about it. You have heard the term Ahimsa Milk. Ahimsa Milk means milk which is coming from protected cows. Actually, we should be taking only such milk. But it is practically impossible to get because we are protecting so few cows. You know. So these are a few thoughts that I wanted to share with you today. I don't get an opportunity to visit here at the Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple very often. And for people like myself who are in a foreign body, of course, we're all in foreign bodies. So... but this particular foreign body is not always able to come to India. So it's a little more, you know, there are varieties of foreign bodies. But we are endeavoring, we have a ministry here in India. I'm sure some of you are knowing. And I'm actually in many ways not so satisfied in that we're still very young. it's not been around for that long and for different reasons has not accomplished as much as at least I would like it to accomplish, but we hope to make it more visible, more relevant as well, so that devotees can be connected with the ideals and the goals and the mandate actually of this ministry. This is a national ministry that we have our leadership established actually close to 4 years ago. And the basic mandate actually of the ministry is to introduce the basic concepts of dharma, specifically Varnashrama dharma, within rural communities, within rural setting. But this is also connected with our city temples in that it is not only, you know, our job, it is actually the duty and responsibility of every single devotee to begin by understanding the point I was making earlier, how our preaching bases should be the cities and our living bases. And in this way, if we start to understand this and become convinced, then we'll start taking up measures by which we can do that. Our villages in India are in tremendous need of support, moral support, spiritual support. You know, our villages have become orphans. Our villages in India have become orphans because so many people have been allured to the Western countries. Most of our brahmanas and kshatriyas have abandoned their villages. That's a reality. They're very sad actually for India. And therefore the principles of dharma are unprotected. And our ISKCON society has a responsibility to do something about this. I will take a few minutes because I don't know. I don't come often enough. I don't know till what time things go in terms of the afternoon class here. And it's always interesting to have a few minutes at the end for some possible comments, questions, and maybe even objections. Yes. Especially we like objections. Thank you very much. Any questions or additional thoughts to... There's one hand back there. Is there a mic? You have the mic. He has the mic. The mic will go there after, okay? Yeah. Since the mic is here.
Thank you, Maharaj, for explaining how the importance of the agriculture and protecting cow, particularly for the devotees.
Hmm.
now in the India, we...
Here we go. Go ahead.
But now in India, we see the circumstances whereby there is a lot of political exploitation of the farmers, and therefore many of the farmers are also committing suicide. And also they are getting attracted to the cities, that's why they are diverting towards the cities. So how on a practical ground it can be established, like farmers are need to be protected as well as there is cow production can be maintained?
Yes, the reality you have described nicely. I mean, that's the hard reality, because we're not preaching. Because we're not preaching in the villages. How many of our devotees in the different cities, because most of our devotees actually are in the cities, most of our temples are in the cities. What activities do we have in the villages? How are we reaching out to the villages? Because we have yet to understand the importance. Vedic culture, the most important, the basis of economy, Vedic culture, is land and cows. Agriculture. Kings would go out of their way to give all kinds of support, you know, to the villages, because that's where the production of food is there, milk and so many essentials of life. So we should not, see, this is important, we should not look at it as some material thing, you know. That's why our acharyas speak of daiva varnasrama. The material swadharma, the material swadharma, which is varnashrama, it is dharma. Dharma means, when it is when we properly understand dharma, means there's a spiritual connection, isn't it? So, although varnashrama system is a material system, when we link it, connect it with Krishna, it is no longer a material system. It becomes spiritualized, isn't it? To the point that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, anyone who is within Varnashrama Dharma, taking up his duties and offering all of this to Krishna, all of that becomes bhakti. All of that becomes bhakti without any karmic reaction. You see? So we should not think that Varnashrama Dharma is something secondary and it is material and therefore I'm a devotee, I'm a Vaishnava and I want nothing to do with something material. We have this body, no? We have to eat every day. We have to deal with the material energy. We have to organize ourselves so that we will live in such a way that it will be most conducive for our spiritual advancement. So, the answer to the question you're asking is that actually we, as a society, must rise. I would say up to now we have not risen to the occasion. We are not understanding the plight, the very serious condition. You mentioned rightly how, I don't know what the number is, but over 200,000, farmers committing suicide because of, you know, the very precarious condition that they found themselves, because of having borrowed money to get a tractor, being allured by the modern, you know, agro-business which is being promoted, which is totally Vedic culture. Bhishmadev instructs in Mahabharata that there are certain things that should never be sold, that should not be considered as commodities, material, ordinary commodities. Land is one of them. One should never sell land. We've deviated from that. One should not sell land. One should not sell cows. Cows are meant to be donated, isn't it? Kings would donate cows. Food is not meant to be sold. Food is meant to be freely distributed. Education, knowledge, not meant to be sold, as we are doing today. Complete deviation to how we can expect good results. So we need to understand these basic concepts. We need to understand that agriculture is not first and foremost to make money. Agriculture for individuals is for our basic sustenance. Produce only what you need and use only what you produce. This is the mantra. Majority of people should follow this concept. Produce only what you need and use only what you produce. Modern day agriculture, total deviation from that. Because people on the top are not understanding concepts. Krishna consciousness begins with concepts, principles, systems. When we understand them properly, then we apply them under proper guidance of acharyas. And then things can gradually... Microphone should work its way back on this side. It's already there maybe. Okay. One question here. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I think you already answered to the question, but still, What is the main importance of cow? Why Krishna gives much attention to cows? And Srila Prabhupada says that we can chant 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles and go back to home. So you told that without cows, no spiritual life. So if you explain it, and cities are for preachers,
yes,
and villages are for cow protection, but people in cities, villages will protect cows and eat nice milk products, which is very beneficial for spiritual life. But what about those devotees who are in the cities who are preaching? So they cannot progress spiritually.
Okay. Okay, let's try to sort that out. If one is somehow or other not able to associate with cows, if one chants 16 rounds and follows the rules and regulations wherever he may be, he can go back home, back to Godhead. However, in a larger picture and looking long term also, there's a particular lifestyle. Vedic culture is teaching us a particular lifestyle where cows are most important. I briefly mentioned how cows, I'll give you an example because that's part of the question. Why are cows so important? Do you know that nobody would be sitting here today worshipping Sri Sri Radha Gopinath if it was not due to cows? Do you know that to install deities, one, the brahmanas need to bathe the deities with panchagavya, with milk, yogurt, ghee, cow urine, and cow dung, panchagavya. No bathing the deities with cow products, no installation of the deities, no worship of Radha Gopinath. Nobody here. This is one of many examples. No Brahminical culture. No cows, no Brahminical culture. You would not be chanting the holy name. Nobody here would be initiated because Brahmanas cannot throw grains in the fire jagya with ghee. No cows, no ghee, no jagya, no diksha, sorry. Can you imagine? You know, so we should understand that Brahmanas cannot do anything without cows. So cows are the pillars of dharma, you see. And they Krishna's every single life is, Krishna's always surrounded, isn't it, by cows. Because he understands these principles. He lives by these principles. No samskara, you know, cannot perform any samskara without jagya. Jagya means, ultimately jagya means cow. Yeah. So, our cities, we are here in the cities actually to not only to distribute books, but also to read these books. You know, we should distribute books, but we should also read to know what's in the books. And in the books, it is explaining about dharma, how we should live, how cows are important, what is a Brahminical culture, what is swadharma. It's in the books. Prabhupada, many years ago, I'm sure some of you have heard, he was telling, my devotees are very nice. They are so enthusiastic to every single day distribute so many books. But I have one complaint. They don't read my books. They only distribute my books. They're very slow or lazy at reading my books. So we should be enthusiastic to distribute books, but we should be as enthusiastic to actually understand what is in these books. What is Prabhupada telling? Prabhupada has spent so many nights, as we know, mornings, early mornings. I mean, his whole life has been given. He's given his life to give us these Bhaktivedanta purports, isn't it? Where all of this information is contained. So therefore, we need to read these books and we need to pray to Krishna, please help us understand, you know, what is actually in these books and these purports. The greatest contribution that Srila Prabhupada has given are these books. So they're not meant to be just kept on a nice shelf, you know. Oh, they look so nice, you know. They're not meant to be just distributed. They're meant to be read, studied. And if we read and study them properly, then we will apply, we will put into practice what is in these books. Prabhupada spoke about, you know, a new phase. This was like 1 year before he left us. We are now about to enter a new phase. And this second phase will be very different from the first one. What is that? We have yet to enter that phase. You see. Microphone. Microphone. Somebody wants to say something. Microphone is just coming. Yes.
You keep on telling that, I mean, we need to read books, we need to read books. If this is the case, why there is a tutor? Why there is a teacher in a classroom of 60, 50, 70, 80 students in a classroom, in a school? There is a teacher in a junior KG, in a senior KG, right? There is a tutor who is teaching various subjects, whether mathematics, whether physics, science, chemistry, English, various languages, history, geography, and various other subjects. So why there is a tutor or a teacher in? Because a teacher also.
And, your question is, I'm mentioning we should read books, and your question is, why do we have tutors? Is it? Can you speak in the microphone, please?
Sure. Because human beings can explain things in a better manner, in a simple manner, giving various examples rather than books, because we can only have some references from those books, seeking some examples. And about the lady, about the Mataji who had the question for cow, because why cows are very dear to Lord Krishna, is because a very simple fact, according to Indian Sanskriti, Indian tradition, I mean, cow has 33 crores of Devi Devatas in it, and that's the reason cows are very dear to Lord Krishna, and that's the reason each and every Hindu worships cows.
Thank you. Okay.
In Shravan Mahina, in Bhadrapad Mahina, we have the importance of cows. Thank you, sir.
Hare Krishna. So, we should, of course, be receiving knowledge from teacher, that is explained by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnanenas tatva darshinaha. If we want to understand tatva, truth, then we should approach, but there's a particular manner by which we should approach a teacher in a very humble manner, in submission with a devotional attitude, and also we should be inquisitive. So it is very important, definitely, to be hearing from a teacher. It is also very important to follow what the teacher is telling. So if the teacher is telling you should also read books, then you should read books. It's called logic. So I think there's another program coming up, I think, after 3 o'clock. So I think I will close here. If anyone has any other questions.
One last. Maharaj, thank you for the wonderful lecture and the wonderful explanations.
Hare Krishna.
And elaborating so much on the importance of cow and cow protection.
Mm.
Now it's even more difficult now to understand what should be the attitude of devotees and those of us who claim or strive to be devotees, as to when 3 days from now so many lakhs of cows are going to be slaughtered in the name of religion.
Mm.
So what should be our attitude now?
This is the last question. As devotees, we should already be very concerned about the fact that for so many years, not only here in India but all over the world, cows are not protected. Cows are not protected because of lack of proper understanding on the part of various leaders, whether they are leaders of a secular state or leaders of a religious denomination. There is no religious denomination which, if properly understood, advocates or supports the killing of cows. For that matter, the killing of any animal. At times, there are restrictions, or what's the word? Allowances, just within our Vedic literatures as well, under certain circumstances, lower animals can be sacrificed, but there are guidelines to follow. Of course, in Kali Yuga, this is also not allowed. Yeah, it is there in the Shastra, but in Kali Yuga it's not allowed. So it means that actually we have a tremendous job to do in terms of getting this message across to our secular leaders and to our religious leaders around the world. That actually you may claim in the name of secularism, in the name of democracy, whatever, that this is allowed, but we should establish, we should demonstrate, we should prove through our preaching, through our in-depth, more in-depth understanding of the principles of Dharma, that this is highly unlawful. This is highly unacceptable. So through preaching in different ways, we should endeavor to bring about the changes which are needed. And if we don't take that up, then we become implicated actually in what is taking place. So this means as individuals and as a society, we should work on strategies. We should pray to Krishna to give us the good intelligence how to actually tackle this, because it is a major problem, of course, here in India and pretty well in all the other countries of the world also. So we have to be intelligent We have to ask Krishna to give us that good intelligence, how to go about in different ways bringing the changes that are needed. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samasta Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gaura Pimanandi, Hare Krishna.